Ви з SBS українською.
12 травня 2022 року у Народному домі в Ессендоні, Мельбурн, штат Вікторія, відбулась інформаційна сесія, організована українською громадою штату Вікторія на порядковому денному. Розглядалось питання візи для біженців та переміщених осіб з України, банківська ситуація, особливо щодо переведення коштів для допомоги Україні та українським військам, а також приватним особам та родичам. Розглядались також питання про подорож до України.
SBS Radio.
So there was a lot of work done both at Prime Minister level, Minister Hawke level, that's the immigration minister, and anybody else that we could co-opt. Federal and state. I've had probably 10 meetings already with Stefunda Romaniu, trying to organise things. The government has come across and done a lot of work, which I'll explain in a minute. So that was week one. We were, five or six of us, I forget how many there were taking calls daily. Media, TV, the whole thing, and then people panicking as to, what do I do? What can I do for my family? Week two, we started to try and organise ourselves. We continued the pressure with the governments, but we set up various liaisons, liaison with the federal police. They're here to help in whatever capacity they can. Today we'll be talking about cybersecurity, particularly as it relates to you logging on and paying, donating money, etc. Special relationships with NISTAD. NISTAD is trying to help us and the people coming to Australia with things like credit cards or debit cards, I should say, and so on. So we're looking at how we can do that quickly. Because you can imagine, any one of us wants to open up an account, you need 100 points. How does a mother with three children have 100 points today? So we have to go through those hoops and see how we can help these people. We've also set up teams, and in particular we've set up a Ukrainian humanitarian aid committee, which Teresa leads, and she'll be talking about that a bit later. Now, that was 5 days ago or 6 days ago, and she's been also scrambling, getting together a team of 8 or 9 people, all volunteers that will be helping in the different areas. We're also looking at creating a hub. Now, we had a discussion with the government, Victorian government, yesterday or 2 days ago, and they were talking about a hub. I don't know what a hub is, I've never seen one, but where there are refugees or displaced people coming into a country, the government helps them by setting up this hub, which is a place where people can come, get supplies, get clothing, or get legal, medical support, etc. Okay? So we're looking at doing that. I'm going to ask Hania to talk about that a little bit more, maybe to tell you what it is. I'm hoping to go and see one of these hubs in action, and my preference would be to set the hub up here. The government has done a lot of work already, and in particular with visas. I'll talk about visas in a minute, especially. But to date, over the last 6 days, they've processed about 330 visas. Okay, and I'll explain the reasons for that. First of all, they're recommending, and everything I'm telling you here is recommendations. People here and your families coming, you can do what you like. You can call yourself refugees, you can raise refugee visas if you like. But the government is recommending to use the tourist subclass 600 visa, either sponsored or unsponsored. And the reason for that is they have categorised that particular visa for Ukrainians as priority. If they use that visa, they will get priority approval normally within 24 hours. And also, it has a lot of, I don't know how to explain it, but softness about it. In other words, normally you need a passport, health check, COVID checks and so forth. The government is going to not so much overlook it, but not look at it as strictly. So if the applicant says, I had to leave my home in a hurry and my passport's at home and I'm here, I don't have it, the government will take that on board and they process the visa. So they look at the visas differently. And the reason to use that we're recommending to use that visa is that will get your family and friends into Australia quickly. That's the quickest way to get them in. Yes, we had a chat this morning with a lady who says no, she's definitely going to raise a visa for as a refugee. Refugee has a totally different status and they could be waiting months. And not only that, the criteria for a refugee would be adhered to strictly. No passport, you can't come. No health check, you can't come. So that's why the government is saying, for the time being, until we get them safe into Australia, use the tourist visa, get them into Australia. Once they're here, in the next week, we hope to have exemptions around that visa. And they'll tell us what the next step will be for these people. Most of these people, mind you, will be coming, it'll be women and children. So we need to get them here and then we look at the next step. Now the next step might be that they recategorise to a humanitarian visa or something, but the government is hoping to this week come up with a definition and eligibility for the services, Centrelink, medical, legal, schooling for children, etc. That's as much as we know as it stands. I'm meeting with Minister Hawke on Thursday and hopefully by then we'll have some definitions and decisions made by the government so we'll be able to go through the next step.
Sorry to hold you up, just our nephew's only arrived on Thursday with his wife and his one-year-old child, and when they went to apply for that visa, they originally got told that it was for 12 months. But if you tick the 12 months box, they send it to London and start processing it in a completely different way. And you should only be applying for 3 months, not 12 months, and then whatever's going to happen will happen.
Okay. Well, that's something new on me. Minister Hawke did say that visa is valid, and not only that, they add 6 months on top of the 12 months. So, can we note that down? I'll actually send a note to him. Thank you. So, all these things are coming thick and fast. So, as you can see, another thing that we weren't aware of. There's also an issue raised about no passports for children. Some children have never had a passport, etc. Not an issue. Minister Hawke said, write down the children's name, give us their age, and say that they've never had a passport or their passport was lost, etc. And that'll be taken into account.
My mum in the queue right now, and I don't know if she can use this visa because she can't get out, but I'm still doing these things, right? Unfortunately, her passport is expired in 2021, and I've been back and forward with the immigration department for probably already 2 weeks. So, and they're telling me, oh, she should go and prolongate her visa and her passport, and I told them, look, she can't do it. She has a passport, but passport expired in 2021, but immigration department telling no, she must extend her passport, right?
That's what I mean about we're going to try and help people, and that's what the Hurumada is for. Okay, so these sort of issues, there will be a lot of issues, and a lot of you will have different ones. So whatever you do, if you can communicate with Teresa, and Teresa will talk to you in a minute, so if you could leave your name and address, and we'll take that up with Minister Hawke. Before I move off passports, Yarama, did you want to say anything?
Dobri den, hello everybody. My name is Jerema Politek. I'm the director of AFUO. We have just loaded up last night the latest information on our website, which is AussieUkes, AussieUkes.com. And if you open that website now, you will be able to scroll right down to the bottom. You'll see various articles of what we've done and what's been happening, but scroll right down the bottom where it says, I need help coming to Australia. What that says is the Australian Department of Home Affairs is supporting Australia's response to escalating crisis in Ukraine. There are fact sheets on the website. What they're saying is, has been said just now, apply for a visa subclass 600, nothing else. As was said, that is a priority for Ukrainians. We get top of the list priority. Then you apply it's in English and in Ukrainian as well. So what you do is, when you complete that form, you can put in, as Tanya said, put in 3 months. Don't put anything else, 3 months, because it automatically gets kicked up to a more lengthy stay. So vaccinations, they're waiving that. Passports, documentations, whatever your relative can scrounge up as an identity will suffice. So don't panic if there's no passports or anything like that. So please read that website. It's very, very clear. Like I said, it was only uploaded last night. So it's AussieUkes.com. All right, thank you.
Ďakujem, Jelena. That's how fast this week has been going. Every step of the way, we find out one thing and then something else happens. So, ďakujem. That's good information. Okay, I'll just cover off 3 more points and then I'll hand over to Gerald from the AFP. First of all, donations. When we started, about 15 days ago, we set up the Ukraine Crisis Appeal. And you would have seen pamphlets going around at our demonstrations about Ukraine Crisis Appeal with a QR code. Over the next 2 weeks, we've had a lot of queries where people don't actually want to give money, donations, to a humanitarian or medical aid. They want to give money for defence, for the army. So we're now going and rejuvenating an appeal program called UHelp, which we've had for a while. And in the next few days, there'll be information coming about UHelp. And the intention of how we want to use UHelp is the money generated from this will go to the army. Okay? So that's the intention. So we'll have those two arms. Now, there are a lot of sites on the internet, American, Canadian, English, where you can go and donate if you wish. I would recommend going with an Australian site, whatever, but you know, it's your choice. We're managing these funds as best we can. The Ukraine Crisis Appeal goes through Rotary and Caritas. So there's a fairly good controlled process of the money getting to where it needs to go. David will talk about this in a minute. We have real concerns about the banking system in Ukraine at the moment. Okay, it depends which city your families are in, whether they've got access to ATMs, what the banks are doing, and what will happen if Russia takes over a bank and so forth. So going through Caritas guarantees as best we can the money gets to Poland, and then from there it'll be funneled into humanitarian and medical assistance. Just a quick word on rallies. Every day I get questioned when's the next rally, and I don't know whether we made the right decision or not. We had 2 rallies, and then we sort of stopped. And my thoughts were that if we have a rally every week, After 3 weeks, there'll be only a few people come to the rally because people just get tired and just old news. I was really waiting for events that might occur in Ukraine that we can actually protest against. Having said that, I think we're going to change that, and Lasia is going to try and organise at least some sort of rally, silent or otherwise, in the city on a weekly basis. So we're in the process of organising that.
Can I mention something to that? Just quickly. If you do want to attend a rally, every day from 6 till 8 p.m., you can join and stand aside the Russian community because they are on Princes Bridge just near Flinders Street. Every day, 6 till 8 p.m., they're holding banners that say, "We stand with Ukraine, we don't want war." So on a daily basis, there's something you can do.
Those that attended the last rally, you would have heard Peter from the Russian community speak. So his group is working on that. In fact, on that note, I've had a number of conversations from a Russian group, and these are people actually born in Donbass. They only speak Russian. They feel a little bit more Russian than Ukrainian, but they don't know where they sit. But they are absolutely angry at Putin, and they also want to work with us to demonstrate against Putin. They say that he's not Russian, he's not ours, he's not representing what we want. So it's just interesting how this is developing. Okay, one last point. I've already mentioned it in passing. We've set up a group, which Teresa will talk about a bit later. It's the AUV, Ukraine Humanitarian Aid Committee. We've also set up a couple of accounts in Dnister, because this aid committee is going to need some funding locally. We can give money to Ukraine, you know, for humanitarian aid there, but we're going to need some money here. So we're going to be looking at what sort of funds we need, hoping that the government might give us some funds. We're also lobbying from that area, and then do what we have to do here. Now, we're dealing with a huge range of people that are coming. There's already, 300 or so people in Australia that have arrived. We didn't know they were coming because they came through families, etc. But most are women and children. We believe they're only here for a short time because they've come without their husbands and partners, so they'll probably go back. Our job is to try and help them through the next 2 years to assimilate, to get accommodation, etc. And some families are calling me and saying, we're giving them accommodation for the next 3 months or so, but we really can't do this for too long. How can you help? So we've got that sort of event. We've got people that will be arriving with no families. So we also have to look at the other end, where people come in and they know nobody. How do we meet and greet them? How do we support them on a daily basis? Because they have nobody to turn to. So it's a fairly big range of types of people that we're expecting. Did you want to add to that?
Further to that, the Australian Federation has applied to the Migrant Council of Australia, it's based in Canberra, for funding with the intent of obtaining funds which obviously would go assist the Ukrainians coming in. So at the moment, we've done it. We've gone as far as we possibly can. So keep an eye out on the Aussie Ukes website. That's the best communication you can possibly get from the Australian Federation as far as what's happening, where it's happening, next steps, etc. All right?
Yeah, and rather than maintaining a number of websites, we're sort of focusing on that one, so that as things change daily, we can be quickly updated and have one point of contact. Okay, one last point, and that is accommodation. Dan, we're close, but I thought we were close last week. That centre that was built for COVID, Mickleham Centre that was built for the COVID, potentially we might be able to use that for some of our people coming over, at least for the short term. So that's up there for grabs. Okay, I'd like to now introduce Gerald from the AFP, who is going to talk to you about a very important point, which I think I don't really think about very much, but it's very important. We're going to be doing a lot of internet stuff, or some of us are, donations, banking, etc. So this is very critical. Gerald.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me today and for the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of some cyber safety stuff. Normally, the stuff that we present to schools to teach young people about how to be safe online, how to not fall for scams, how to not become prey to online predators, pedophiles. There's also stuff here that's relevant for you guys, and it's around password protection and things like that. Just recently, as a result of the thing that's going on in Ukraine right now, we've all been told that everyone should be updating their security settings on their computers, maybe upgrade to a better operating system or McAfee or whatever it's called out there, but talk to professionals about that and get your computers upgraded. And also, we've all heard and seen about the online scams that come, whether it's via email, text message, or phone calls about, you know, tax departments after you, you need to pay for these or else they're going to come and arrest you, things like that. That's all rubbish. Police don't operate like that. The tax department doesn't operate like that. If you're getting any kind of text message, any kind of email that you do not know who it's from, I suggest you delete it, don't open it. A lot of the hacks come in as an innocuous thing. It looks harmless, but the minute you open it, you let in a virus, okay? And that's the problem. Some people that you might get in contact with or might call you or cold call you, and it happens a lot, they'll tell you that your computer, they've detected there's a virus in your computer, follow these steps and I will guide you through how to get it out. If you are unfortunate enough to believe these people and allow them to talk you into setting your computer up, basically you're going to give them remote access into your computer and that's it. They've locked you out, they've installed viruses, so don't talk to anyone in the computer world that you don't know. So today what I've got is a presentation, which is the adult version of a thing called Think You Know. So we deliver this in schools from grade 1 up to year 12, and there's also a version for culturally and linguistically diverse communities. But this is the adult version here. So Think You Know, it initially was designed by the British police, and it was modified for an Australian audience. It's law enforcement driven, and it's delivered by volunteers in industry and in all law enforcement. So Bankwest, Datacom, Microsoft, Commonwealth Bank, and every state and territory police force will deliver this. The aim of this is to talk about things that kids say, see, and do online, and how what they do online can not only affect them straight away, but affect them in the future when they go looking for a job. And you'll see in the later slides what I'm talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, just before we start too, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which we meet today, and I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
We've established or started up a relationship with the AFP, and they're here to help in a range over a range of things. So our first meeting, I think we had four of their people here. They're looking at finance, legal aspects, cyber security and so forth, and they want to work with us and understand our needs. So I thank them for that.
Before I start this, I'll just give you a bit of a background about my team and where we come from and how we've gotten to this place. After the terrorist attacks of September 11 in America, there was a big disconnect with the Muslim community in Australia, and my team was designed by two Muslim police officers and our hierarchy to put a team together to reconnect and bridge that gap between the Islamic community and the broader Australian community. To my Muslim brothers and sisters in the audience, Assalamu alaikum. Sorry, I didn't say hi earlier. So that's how our team was started. We have migrated and moved and grown, and we cast a much wider net into more communities now. So wherever there's a community or a new emerging community that needs our assistance, we're there to help and help that community with whatever they need, what we can do. Okay, talking about the technology. Technology now, it's different to what it was when we were kids. They've got access to online, instant messaging around the world, locally, and it's good, but it's also got some real bad stuff in it, and we're going to talk a bit about that.
Okay, I just want to pick up on a couple of things. We're going to talk about general cyber safety in relation to payments, payment systems, regulations, because it's everybody wants to be able to do something to help Ukraine, But at the moment, we've got a conflict between the things governments have done to help Ukraine in the form of sanctions and the reality of sending money into Ukraine at the moment. So I'm going to get into that in a bit of detail in a moment, and about charity selection and the issues associated with that. One thing I just want to tie back to what Gerald is talking about. There's a lot of stuff, if you read through some of the background material coming in the media about the impacts of what's happening in Ukraine at the moment on children. The media and the psychologists are talking about it only in terms of the broader community. For our kids, who know people in Ukraine, who may have met kids from there on camps or on trips or on hike, you know, dancing groups have gone to Ukraine. Scouts, SUM, our kids here have been to Ukraine, they've got family over there. The vulnerability that can come at a time like this is when the predators, that relates back to what Gerald was just talking about, those predators know what communities are under pressure and they can target those children in those communities. So that's just something to bear in mind. If you see your kids showing signs, they're things to watch for.
Guys, just on that, if you see your kids, grandkids' personalities, behaviour changing, like they're becoming withdrawn or they're taking their devices, becoming more secretive, getting a bit dark in their personality, maybe not wanting to share with you what they're looking at online, this is concerning behaviour and you might want to get on top of that. Okay, you might want to have a sneaky look at their phone to see what they're looking at, because obviously during the height of ISIS, there was some horrible stuff going around on the internet, you know, really grotesque stuff, and kids were watching it, and then radicalisation was happening online. So that's one part of it, but here you've got other parts of it where kids can be damaged psychologically, and if you start seeing that, behaviour changes, start being concerned, start looking at it.
Thanks. Now, okay, coming back to the sanctions. The Western governments, for the first time ever, have put sanctions on the Russian Central Bank. Fantastic. Stops Putin being able to fund his attacks on Ukraine. Unfortunately, one of the consequences of that is a lot of financial transactions are no longer going through to Ukraine. When a transaction is initiated in Australia, it doesn't transfer straight from Australia to the bank in Ukraine. It goes through the payment infrastructure run in Belgium by a group called SWIFT, and there's a whole series of transactions at the start and the end. On the 25th of February, the first full day Australian time of the invasion, MoneyGram, for example, suddenly decided they weren't willing to transfer money over because they were worried that the Ukrainian banking system was under attack, ATMs were being overrun, so they withdrew services and money couldn't be transferred to Ukrainian banks for about 24 hours. They worked out, though, that Ukrainian banks were far more resilient than they'd expected, and they restored that service. Amex, on the other hand, pulled the plug last Wednesday. And they've pulled the plug not because they've got concerns about payments getting there. Their concern is that now that sanctions have been put on the Russian banks, if the Russians get access to a Ukrainian bank, having transferred money to the Ukrainian bank, that money will be in Russian hands and will be a breach of sanctions.
SBS.
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 SBS Radio.
В даному репортажі ми надали вам сегмент з засідання. Повному обсязі інформаційну сесію ви можете знайти на YouTube-каналі Української громади Вікторії.
Подобається? Поділіться, прокоментуйте. Слідкуйте за SBS Українською на Facebook.